Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
This hour is sponsored by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Affordable implants, life-changing smiles.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now is a man who's got a massive brain.
Mike Florio.
He used to be a lawyer, then he decided to take his talents to the internet.
NBC Sports.
I'm sorry I'm late. I was talking to Robert Kraft.
That isn't the time for an airing of grievances.
Pro Football Talk.
I got a lot of problems with you people. Now... you're going to hear about it.
On Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Except we don't have a lot of problems with Mike Florio. He is the creator, the editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. He joins us on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today, and I'm pretty sure that he's going to be happy and victorious because Mike is a Vikings guy, and, well, that was quite the comeback win for the Vikings over the Bears on Monday Night Football. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing great. Yeah, it was a crazy night. The win percentage was something like 7.7%. I would have put it lower than that. My son and I were watching the game down in our barn, and he asked me midway through the third quarter, do you think there's a chance here? It's like, well, it's only 17-6, but I don't see the Vikings scoring 11 points if they play two games, not one. So for them to snap out of that funk and explode for 21 points in the fourth quarter – yeah, that's not something I remember seeing very often from any team, especially not the Vikings.
What are your thoughts about the two quarterbacks involved, J.J. McCarthy, Caleb Williams, both famously from the same draft class?
Well, there were moments where Caleb Williams looked spectacular. His ability to run away from the pressure, the speed, the acceleration that he showed, the escapability, there was at least one occasion where it looked like he was done. He was down, play was over, and he kept going. He had some very accurate throws, but he also had some inaccurate throws. And I think as the game went on, the pressure started to get to him a little bit. I think maybe he accelerated his own mental clock a little too quickly when he had DJ Moore wide open after the 35-yard catch by Cole Kmet. And if they score in that moment, there's a lot more time to get the ball back, force overtime, if not win the game in regulation. It would have been a dramatic pendulum swing for the Bears if he had hit more. So there's stuff that he needs to do. And for McCarthy, to his credit, it looked like he didn't belong early on. Took too long to get the plays called. Clock ticking down to zero. Had at least one delay of game penalty. And then all of a sudden, it just turned. The running game helped. Jordan Mason powering between the tackles, softening up the defense a little bit. McCarthy shaking off everything that had happened, including the pick six, which I and many others surely believe meant the game was over. For him to really turn it around, and the emotion that he showed, the leadership. He made some comments after the game that when things were going poorly, he said to the guys in the huddle, where else would you rather be? It caused them to loosen up. That's the kind of thing you look for. It's the kind of stuff you can't measure when you're doing the pre-draft evaluation. They always say you can't measure a guy's heart. He showed heart. He showed toughness. He showed resilience. And I think that's why Vikings fans emerged from that game thinking, you know, maybe they finally have something. It's been a long time. It's been a lot of revolving door quarterbacks for the Vikings, really since Fran Tarkenton. Maybe they got something they can build around for years to come.
Well, and Mike, J.J. McCarthy, of course, from LaGrange, you know, he went to Nazareth High School here before he went to Nazareth Prep, before he went to IMG Academy. And I think the stories about his leadership are something that, yeah, you can't exactly quantify that on a scale. But that definitely seemed to be one of the biggest compliments about him, in addition to getting to a national title game and winning that type of thing. That was something that people talked about him pretty readily whenever he was getting through the draft process.
Well, and I remember when that process was first beginning. I don't know where I had him in my own mind, but when Jim Harbaugh really started praising him, and look, that's what coaches do, but it almost feels like Harbaugh's effort to shine a light on the abilities of J.J. McCarthy caused him to be taken far more seriously, even though he was with a team that didn't throw the ball a whole lot. So there were just so many unknowns about McCarthy, especially because last year he didn't play at all. It was a complete and total open book for him in that debut. And the first 45 minutes were as bad as they could have been. The final 15 minutes couldn't have gone any better. And now we see where they go from here. And he himself mentioned multiple times in his post-game press conference, it's on to Atlanta. It's that Belichick mindset. You got to forget about this one, get on to the next one. But boy, that first one, I tell you, I didn't expect it to happen. And even after the Vikings took a 10-point lead, I felt like the Bears were going to come back and win it. And they had a chance to do it. But for, you know, the timeout that was wasted on the TJ Hockenson non-fumble review, but for the decision to not kick the ball out of bounds and give the Vikings the ball at the 40 on the other side of the two-minute warning, it could have gone to overtime and the Bears still could have won the game.
Mike Flora joins us each and every week here on Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody. He's the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. Mike, every year we do this, overreactions after week one. What's the biggest overreaction in your opinion?
Well, I don't call it overreaction. I call it reaction. Okay. We're reacting to what we have. We've waited 7 months for football. We got one slate of games, so we react. And will it be an overreaction? Time will tell. I always say two things about week one. Number one, you never know how good the team is you beat. You never know how good the team is that beat you. You may have lost to the eventual Super Bowl champion. You may have blown out the team that's going to have the first pick in the draft. And secondly, I always say throw out week one, because the team you're going to be in January means nothing in comparison to the team you are in September. The only teams that really should worry are the teams that lose at home to division rivals, like the Bears, because Dang. You still have to go to the other team's place, and if you get swept, it's much harder to win the division. Now, the Falcons swept the Bucs last year, and the Bucs still won the NFC South, but it just makes it harder if you lose at home to one of the teams you have to eventually play again on the road, and if you lose that, the head-to-head tiebreaker is gone for the balance of the season. Other than that, hey, if I'm a Dolphins fan, I'm counting the days until hockey starts. Isn't the hockey team in Miami pretty good right now, the Florida Panthers? Like, I feel like there's no coming back, or it's going to be very difficult to come back from that. They've been undefeated through week one under each year with Mike McDaniel as the coach. For them to just get bullied like they did by the Indianapolis Colts, I don't know that there's anything positive. In fact, McDaniel himself said, the only good thing about it is it can't get any worse. And I'll submit to you, it can get worse. 10 years ago, 4 weeks into the season, owner Stephen Ross fired Joe Philbin when they were 1-3. So it can get worse for the Dolphins. And we could see. I mean, if I'm picking any coach right now to be most likely to be fired in the season, Mike McDaniel's top of the list.
Mike, I would like to submit for the record that nobody wanted to win the NFC South.
True.
Okay. Now that we've brought that up, and perhaps the best argument for reseeding once a playoff begins, I would also like to ask that question just about, I feel like the discussion went exponentially bad for Mike McCarthy. Like, we saw whispers of it here because, you know, there was the back and forth from the team in Miami when they came here for practices, and some of the Dolphins said, the Bears were being abnormally physical in practices. You saw a little bit of irritation there, but to see how the discourse has surrounded Mike McDaniel when it came to just what we're seeing now, I'm like, how did we get here so quickly? You know, how did one of the branches of the Shanahan coaching tree wither like this so fast?
And, you know, what happened was they went to the playoffs the first 2 years. So it's a lot to think that an owner is going to fire a guy after one non-playoff season, but I think the warning signs were there. And going into the season, there weren't many things of which I was certain. One is that the Dolphins were going to struggle and not be nearly as good as their fans think they were going to be. Every year, they talk and talk, culture change, we're going to do this different, we're going to do this better, and they never really turn it around. It falls apart for them when the weather turns and the games get more intense. This year, we're seeing it right out of the gates. And last year, Jordan Brooks, who's a captain this year, and I thought maybe that would change things, he said after the Dolphins lost to the Packers at Lambeau Field on Thanksgiving night, we were soft. Well, they didn't look anything but soft against the Indianapolis Colts. And Xavien Howard, who used to play for the Dolphins, now plays for the Colts, said with Tua, if you take away his first read, their quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa, goes into panic mode. That's not a good sign either. So They have a lot of work to do, not much time to do it. They have a winnable game this week against the Patriots, but I guarantee you Mike Vrabel, the New England coach, is going to be telling his team all week, let's go down there and put them in panic mode. Let's go down there and hit them. Let's rattle them and hope that the spiral that started last Sunday continues into week two. Oh, and then short week, Thursday night, they go to Buffalo to face the Bills.
We're talking football with Mike Florio, creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk. Okay, Mike, walk me through this. The Eagles just traded two draft picks for running back Tank Bigsby of the Jacksonville Jaguars. The Bears, as you saw, used exactly one running back to run the football all night on Monday. Why do the Eagles keep playing chess while everybody else seemingly plays checkers or even Connect Four?
If I was any of the other teams and the Eagles called me and expressed interest in trading for one of my guys, the first thing I would do is take a step back and say, maybe I shouldn't trade this guy. Now, Bigsby last year was emerging as the better option to Travis Etienne in the Jacksonville backfield. But we saw week one, Etienne clearly the guy, over 100 yards rushing in the Liam Cohen offense. So Bigsby becomes expendable. And you just wonder how many different teams the Jaguars called before they did this. Could they have gotten more? I don't know. But yeah, anytime the Eagles are sniffing around, beware, because they have a plan and they're ready to implement it. And it's probably going to look like they got the better of the deal.
Do you feel like the Bears need another running back based on what you saw?
No, I just think they need better blocking. I mean, look at what the Vikings defensive tackles did. I was stunned by this. Now, this isn't relevant to the run game, but I think it is something that applies across the board. There are two new starting defensive tackles on the interior, Javon Hargrave and Jonathan Allen. Mm-hmm. They combined for 13 quarterback pressures. Last year, the two Vikings starting defensive tackles combined for 21 the entire year. So that push up front, that, you know, what are your guys in the middle doing? What is your offensive line doing? And when it was clicking for the Bears, and that's what makes Monday night so stunning, because, I mean, it looked like the Vikings didn't even belong on the same field as the Bears early on, but the Vikings defense did enough to keep the game within reach. But DeAndre Swift, I thought, looked great at times. You need to keep that sustained throughout the course of the entire game.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. And the way that Brian Flores used him as well. Our segment with Mike Florio, the creator and editor-in-chief of Pro Football Talk, is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today. Another game that we had fun talking about and hyping up here last week was Steelers and Jets. But even before we just got to you, Mike, Marshall and I were both talking about how amongst all of this is probably some credit that really needs to be given to Jets coach Aaron Glenn, because Ben Johnson, of course, is the notable name offensively, but I think what the Jets showed against the Steelers showed a lot of promise, too.
Well, offensively, yes. Defensively, no. That's what's so weird about that game. I said on Sunday, if you gave me the full slate for week one and you said one of the final scores is going to be 34-32, the last game I would have picked to be 34-32 was Steelers-Jets. Both teams were entering the game with an idea that they're going to be stout on defense. The Steelers always are. The Steelers didn't play defense. They didn't have a running game. I mean, when you consider that Aaron Rodgers had four touchdown passes and no interceptions for the 28th time in his career, tying Tom Brady for the all-time record, and it still took a 60-yard field goal from Chris Boswell to avoid a loss, how perplexing that would have been. We talk about overreaction. I don't think anyone who follows the Steelers would have known how to react to that kind of a performance from Aaron Rodgers in a loss to start the season. So there is something positive for the Jets. Glass half full. Offense looks good. But boy, that defense needs to toughen up a little bit, especially in the passing game, because they got abused by Aaron Rodgers.
We're looking around at the rest of the NFL, and I see that the Cowboys are in talks with Jadeveon Clowney. Do you feel like this guy's got a lot of tread left on the tires?
Noted run stopper, Jadeveon Clowney. Got to stop the run in Dallas. I think Jadeveon Clowney has been underrated because, and this is something Chris Sims turned me on to several years ago, there's a dynamic that he calls F up the play, although he uses more colorful language. It doesn't show up in the stats, but when you have a guy who can create havoc and make it easier for his teammates to get to the ball, that is something that is indispensable. Aaron Donald did that. Jadeveon Clowney, in his peak, did that consistently. The issue with him has been staying healthy. And the question is, are we getting to the point where the tank may be emptying? He was drafted first overall in 2014. How much is left for Jadeveon Clowney? But, you know, the Cowboys have a hole to fill. They can talk all they want about how and why they traded Micah Parsons, but it leaves a void. And Clowney's available. Now that we're through week one, whatever you pay him doesn't instantly come fully guaranteed for the rest of the year under the CBA's termination pay provision. We've seen some guys get signed after the first game of the season, like Za'Darius Smith by the Eagles. Another example, Eagles swoop in and grab a guy who's out there, and you ask yourself, what were the other teams missing if the Eagles wanted him? So the Eagles didn't make a play for Jadeveon Clowney. Maybe that tells us all we need to know about whether the Cowboys should be.
Oh, man. Yeah, unfortunately, I think that you just told a lot of truths in that one sentence. And speaking of former Cowboys, what is this about Micah Parsons talking his way into more playing time on Sunday?
Well, look, the issue with Parsons entering week one wasn't his back. His back was sufficiently injured to justify not risking further injury to the back without financial security that comes from a new contract. He was healthy enough to go. The question was, does he know enough of the Green Bay defense to do anything other than enter the game in obvious passing situations where his job as a pass rusher is to rush the passer? You don't need to really understand how your assignment fits with other players and stay within the framework of what the defense requires in that moment when you're just rushing the passer. But, you know, it was working. Whatever they were doing was working tremendously well. He has a new rival in Penei Sewell. They had him rushing from that side against the best tackle they have and arguably one of the best tackles in the NFL. So Parsons, as he gets settled in, is only going to get better and better. And I thought his comments after the game were very appropriate. Why did this take so long? Why is a player ever in this situation where you are finally dumped onto a new team a week and a half before the season starts and you aren't able to get yourself up to speed and ready to go? The whole thing was handled poorly by the Dallas Cowboys, and they're going to get what they deserve out of this because chances are those two draft picks are going to be late in round one. They're not going to get another Micah Parsons out of it, and they're going to regret giving up on Parsons, especially when they see what he does for the Packers.
Yes. Yes, and yes, I agree. Mike Florio, thanks as always for your insight and joining us today here on Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on The Score.
Thanks, Mike.
Great talking to you. Have a great week.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. He's got a lot of stuff, especially on his Twitter feed today, and I think also on the website that you want to check out.
Football's back, baby.
That it is, and I think he brings up a lot of good points just about I think we should talk about this tomorrow or Friday. We saw two very valuable evaluations already in the NFC North, and that we had two conference game or division games to start.
A lot of stuff to sort
past
through,
weekend.
Right?
So learning a lot early may benefit, unfortunately, everybody, but also the Bears moving forward.
Yeah, I think more so for the teams that got beat in the week one matchups. It's back to the drawing board and you can really figure things out. Whereas if you win the game, it's like, okay, we got to win, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, and the other thing is on Sunday, you need to know how much of that Lions offensive non-success was either because of Micah Parsons playing an inspired game for the Packers, or if it's what they look like. So we'll find that out coming up, and we will discuss over the next couple of days. Coming up next, we got to talk to our outfielder in residence, Ian Happ, will join us from Atlanta next. This is Rahimi and Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Score.
The talent that's here and the talent that is continuing to develop here. We obviously have some mainstay guys like Ian Happ.
Ian Happ, Cubs all-star outfielder.
Happ waits, the 2-1 delivery. High fly ball hit to deep left center field. This is going to go. It's gone! Ian Happ with the fourth home run of the afternoon for the Cubs.
Gold Glove Award winner.
Line drive, left center field. Happ is out there. Oh, what a play! Ian Happ
gorgeous play.
Host of the Compound Podcast.
When it gets really hard is when you go in to do your work and your work sucks. Like you go in to do your cage work and your cage work is trash. I had a stretch this year where I wasn't getting the results in the game, but my work was good. My BP was good. I was still hitting balls hard. They just weren't finding holes.
Connect Roasters coffee enthusiast.
Here's a man that probably has 5 fresh pots a day.
Ian Happ on 670 The Score.
We toast you, Ian Happ.
Ian Happ joining us here on the Circle Resort and Casino Hotline, CircleLasVegas.com. This is Raheemy and Harrison, Mark Grody on 670 The Score and the Cubs Gold Glover co-host the Compound Podcast. It is now a part of Odyssey Sports. New episodes drop each Wednesday with the latest discussion on the Cubs and baseball. They're usually on Marquee right after Cubs postgame. Download and listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Thanks for joining us, Ian.
How you guys doing?
We're doing okay.
Yeah, we're good. You're in Atlanta. Is it steamy there still? I feel like Atlanta in September is not exactly a physically cool place to play.
It's actually unbelievable weather right now. I don't know how we lucked out. I mean, they always play night games here. So we got the late getaway today, but it's like 75 and perfect.
Okay.
Congratulations on that. That is pretty incredible. Yeah.
We like that. Ian, a lot of news going around your team right now. Most notably, Kyle Tucker placed on the IL after he was trying to kind of battle through the calf tightness that's been plaguing him for a little over a week. How big of a blow is that for a team that's obviously getting geared up for the postseason and you want to be hitting on all cylinders?
Yeah, just tough. Tuck just wasn't making a ton of progress with the calf, so it makes sense to give him the 10 days and let him get right for the end of September. But you know, it's going to give some guys opportunities here to play and step into that role. And, obviously you've got one of your best hitters and one of the best players in baseball. You want him in the lineup, but it's more important that he gets himself healthy.
And I think that's something, you know, you guys have had to deal with. We've talked about it before. It happens over the course of the season. How does it feel when it's in September that, you know, some of the main characters, I think, of the team this past year as far as a contribution, you know, Daniel Palencia gets added to that as well. Like, how do you manage that just knowing that the injuries are going to occur, but in September when you've got the postseason in sight, what's the mentality?
Yeah, I think, you know, things are going to happen throughout the year. We've been fortunate to have a pretty healthy group for most of the season, so when stuff like this happens, I think our group is built to kind of keep going and replace. I mean, every team is, but you know, we did a good job in the bullpen of adding at the deadline. So having the ability to turn to a few other guys and I think it's a real team mentality this time of year where you're just all pulling together to stack up as many wins as you can.
I know I've asked you about your success against Spencer Strider this season before, but once again, I'm in the position to do so yesterday. You get a double off of him. Cubs end up winning the game yesterday by a score of 6-1. You know, what was your approach when you faced him this last time?
I'd had some good at-bats against him at Wrigley last week and had hit a slider. And he jammed me pretty good on a heater. I got a knock on it, but broke my bat. And so, you know, just being on time for the fastball, this time and really committing to it. And I hit two fastballs hard my first two at bats. And so just taking advantage of that and trying to be, kind of play the game. And it happens a couple times throughout the year with this schedule where you kind of play a team back to back and you might face the same pitcher two times in a row. And so trying to make those adjustments and have a really solid plan going into the game, you know, kind of based on how they pitched you the time before or where you struggled or where you had success.
If my research is correct, you've never faced Chris Sale in your career. Is that right?
Never have.
So
never have.
How much do you relish an opportunity like this, but at the same time, like you just said, in the preparation for a guy, how tough of a prep is this for the reigning Cy Young winner?
Yeah, I mean, he's been unbelievable. And so just being as prepared as you can, you know, looking at his pitch mix and trying to figure out, you know, what he's doing, what it looks like, and how he's trying to get guys out. I think that's you know, the challenge with facing somebody who's elite like this is you have to really be stubborn to your plan and understand that you're going to get, you know, three at bats off him, and you're going to have to make the most of the opportunities. Guy that doesn't make a lot of mistakes, doesn't give up a lot of hard contact, and so trying to be pretty stubborn to something and see if you can just get on base a couple times and try to help the group out.
I'm glad you brought up the phrase stubborn to your plan, because in reading the article about you in The Athletic that came out, I feel like that was the theme. We talk a lot about overthinking things. I think Craig Counsell had a really good point when he was talking about pitching in last night's game. But you do that. You're stubborn to your plan when it comes to knowing your approach and knowing how your numbers are going to turn out at the end of the season. I think my biggest takeaway was, just like when you talk to us, how difficult it can be to do that very thing. You know, what were your takeaways from just talking to the reporters and about your approach and having this day in and day out to the point of not just being boring, but dedicated about it?
Yeah, I mean, over the course of the season, you have to be really stubborn. You have to be really committed to what you do and what you do well. And the beauty of how long the season is you get 650 at bats, you get the opportunities. And so not getting too caught up when things are going poorly for stretch, or really looking deeper into, am I doing the right things? Am I swinging at the right pitches? Am I staying in the zone and not chasing, you know, walking, not striking out, hitting the ball hard and hitting the ball in the air? Like, if you're doing those things over the course of the season, it should play itself out to a place where your numbers are where you expect, and the back of the baseball card shows up. And so really having that belief and that confidence in yourself that that's what's going to happen, and not getting frustrated by hitting balls hard at people and getting out, because it is so much more about the process than it is about the results. Because any given day, you know, you can have a great process and not get the results in this game. That's what makes it so frustrating. But the more you can continue to do that over and over again, you set yourself up for success.
I don't necessarily know that we talk about how much of a challenge that is, where sometimes the biggest opponent you have in baseball is yourself. How do you describe that? Because I think that might be one of the most difficult parts of the game, knowing it's every day and every at bat and what you do.
Yeah, it's so mental. It's so mental, and you fail so much. You know, the game is just gives you failure every single day. And you have a great day. I had a great day yesterday. I had, you know, five at bats, four of them are really good, and you know, you get two hits, and that's a great day. But you still got out three times, and you're still, you know, I still swung at a bad pitch in my last at bat, and I'm still frustrated by it. But you go through that process, and you kind of look back, and you take stock on it, and you say, okay, I had four really good at bats, I made really good decisions all day, and you learn from it, and you move on. And the hardest part of this game is the mental part, and you can make the decision to focus on the one at bat that you didn't like, or the one pitch that you missed, or you can choose to focus on all the positives you did and carry those into the next day. And it really is, it's a season long of making that decision to be confident and to be, you know, kind of your biggest cheerleader. And that's the hardest part of doing it every single day, is you have to make that decision every single day for, you know, for 8 months.
The grind is real, as we talk to Ian Happ, Cubs outfielder here on Raheemian Harris with Mark Grody. Ian, give it to me straight. 17 games left to play. You're 6.5 games out. They say I'm being unrealistic in believing the Cubs can catch the Brewers. What say you?
You got to believe it. I mean, you got to believe that it's possible, because things can change really quick in this game. But the only way that we're going to do that is by, you know, being super, super committed to every single day, you know, being taking it one day at a time, and being, hey, we're going to go beat the Braves today, and then, you know, we'll get an off day to regroup, and then we'll go into the next series. So you can't think about, oh man, we got to go 13-4 in these last 17. It's like, that doesn't work like that. You can't live in the future. You can't live in a place where you're thinking about the end of the season. You really have to be stubborn to every single day. And that's the most important kind of message to the group right now, is just really coming out with great energy every day and competing one day at a time.
I love this productively stubborn concept. I'm just usually stubborn. This segment with Ian Happ is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. Anthony Rizzo was on with our morning show earlier today, making the retirement official as well. What can you say about what he meant to you and his career?
Yeah, I mean, just an unbelievable career. You know, the accolades, the numbers, the World Series. You know, there's plenty of things you can say about what Anthony did as a baseball player, but so much more about what he meant to the city of Chicago, you know, what he meant to the Cubs organization, to be the guy who was here at the beginning, you know, on a 100-loss team, before things flipped and before kind of that 15-16 run. And then what he meant to me as a player, I mean, and as a friend. And he stood at my wedding, and we're really, really close. But from day one, he took me under his wing. He taught me how to be a professional. He taught me how to go about a routine, how to play day games at Wrigley, how to handle success and failure. You know, he was with me every step of the way, was the first guy after I got sent down in 19 to set up dinner, to set up golf, to get my mind off things, checking in on me every single day. He was the captain of those teams and the best leader I've been around. And I can't say enough about, you know, what he has meant to me throughout my baseball career.
What do you think Saturday is going to be like where they honor him at Wrigley?
It's going to be pretty special. It's going to be really, really cool. You know, I'm excited for it. I'm excited for him to be back, to be an ambassador, to be around Chicago and Wrigley, and to see the fans embrace him. You know, lucky to be here for when he came back and to see the standing O and everything for him. But, you know, I think this one, retiring a Cub, is going to be extremely, extremely special. I think, you know, we've had guys come back for sure. But this is kind of the first, I guess, retirement as a Cub and somebody who meant this much, and to have him back, like, it's going to be a special day for the fan base. But, you know, I'll probably be waterworks out there. I'll be pretty emotional about it, I'm not going to lie.
Well, he did stand in your wedding. I think that that's okay. I'm pretty sure it's allowed at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I'll be out there top stepping and clapping. You'll see me.
Top step for sure, Ian Happ. Thank you so much. Have a great game today in Atlanta. Good luck against Chris Sale. And we'll make sure to see where you are in the dugout on Saturday.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Ian.
That's Ian Happ, of course, joining us every week as he does. And Ian Happ, of course, also with Connect Roasters. And he had his foundation charity fundraiser last Saturday as well. If you want to look into that, the Ian Happ Foundation is how you find that information. I did not mean for that to rhyme.
No, it's good. We're rolling like that today. If you want to be a poet and not even know it, that's your prerogative.
All right. You can live how you want to live.
Do what you want to do.
You know who's probably not doing that as much as they would like?
That would probably be the man who normally holds down right field for the Cubs.
Kyle Tucker. We mentioned it with Ian Happ. We will get into it because when you're facing Chris Sale, you could use that guy. But as we know, you might need a healthy Kyle Tucker more. So we'll examine next. And again, the case of Cade Horton. That's all coming up here in Raheem and Harris with Mark Rohde on 670 The Score.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
The midday show gets to be the cool show.
Because it is the cool show.
Layla Rahimi, Marshall Harris with Mark Grody. Middays 10 a.m. to 2 on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. I know we're cool.
Felt like probably it was just a little worse today than it was yesterday. Yesterday was a really good day, and just didn't have any progress today. Didn't really get to a point of a lot of effort at all, and wasn't comfortable playing, and so we just said, well, we got to give this a little more time.
That is Craig Counsell. He is talking about the decision that we thought might have come earlier, but it ended up coming more recently. Kyle Tucker placed on the injured list with a calf strain. That news coming down yesterday. And I feel like at this point, we all just are looking for what we see, if anything is different out of Kyle Tucker, and wonder if he's healthy or not. Was it the right decision? Yes. Was I surprised that it came a little later in the process after how they said Saturday was supposed to be the most important day to evaluate? And here we are talking about this on Wednesday. Maybe that part was a little bit less expected.
When he was available to pinch hit on Monday, that's when I was like, okay, maybe he's turned the corner on this. But I think the realization, if you're the Cubs and if you are Jed, if you are Craig Counsell, it is, we need this guy at full strength. There's less than 3 weeks to go. If we need to sit him down, we sit him the freak down, because you're not going anywhere of consequence without Kyle Tucker in your lineup once the postseason starts. So that becomes priority number one. The magic number for the Cubs to clinch a playoff spot is 10. That means any combination of 10 Cubs wins and Padres losses get them into the playoffs. That's why they have a 99.9% chance of going to the playoffs. That's not the issue here. Now, being the fourth team, aka the first wild card, versus being the last team or the second to last team and not having home field advantage in the wild card round, that's one thing. The other thing, though, is they want to be able to set up their playoff rotation, make sure Shota is in a better place than maybe what we've seen, make sure Jameson Taillon is a guy, make sure that, you know, obviously Matthew Boyd is back to what he was doing in the first half of the season. There's a lot of things they need to get in order to have their best chance at making a playoff run. Notice I didn't say deep. I just meant like went around in the playoffs.
Well, and again, you know, it stuck with me when we talked to Adam Amin, Marshall, when he said, the more baseball players I talk to and the more people I talk to just out of organizations, it truly is get in the playoffs. Get in the playoffs, and you never know what can happen. Unfortunately, we kind of have seen a trend when it comes to Craig Counsell's teams getting into the playoffs. I don't necessarily know that that's going to be the case for the Brewers this time around. But I think when you're trying to measure what the success level could be, what the likelihoods are once they get there, I've often said, I'm like, I don't know that they did enough to confidently say to themselves, yes, this is going to get us to another round in the playoffs, especially when you're dropping 2 or 3 to the Nationals, for example. But you have to do what you can to ensure. Now, this is September 10th. It's not like we're talking about this even on September 1st, which is crucial in this. So for me, yes, I've said it all along. Rest the dude. I know that's not his ideal scenario. He's done everything he can to be graceful about it. I understand that this is a contract year for him. $200 million is the delta when you're talking about Jim Bowden was $600 and now the market's supposedly $400. All of that is wild, and I can't even imagine
that's
it. I stress
money.
Out about losing $20.
That's a lot of money.
So I can't imagine that piece of it going through my head. But I can say this. If it comes down to your everyday, day-to-day decision-making process, do you feel good? If you don't, it's okay. I don't want you feeling worse later. Your body can sometimes be like a car. Unfortunately, the machine piece of it doesn't get better with use if it's already kind of clunky. Change out the oil, so to speak. Rest yourself, especially in right field, when we know right field in Atlanta, for example, has not been a kind place to the recent Cubs of the past 2 years or so. So go ahead. Chill out right now. Go in the injured list. Backdate it because you can. Let's pause and figure this out for go time, which they have put themselves in a position to be in.
It seems like since the beginning of this month, we've talked about a Cubs team that is clearly leaking oil. What you don't want to do is go from leaking oil with little knick-knack injuries or even some tightness in a calf.
Knick-knack injuries is a great term.
Yeah, you don't want to go from knick-knack injuries in the tightness of the calf and other things to, we need a new transmission because Kyle Tucker's unavailable in a playoff series.
I mean, that's what I get concerned about here. You know, this is somebody who had more injury problems than I think he would like to admit this year. And in that, I'm balancing how I have to reconcile it. Because of that, if he leaves, how successful was this?
Well,
and when it comes to the injured list, too, that's a part of it. the biggest piece of it for me is I want him to be honest, and that's going to help the team the most. And I'm not saying he's lying. I'm saying be honest with yourself about how you're feeling. So this is good. But when you consider the big picture, like I need that dude for the playoffs because he's partially what has gotten them there. The reason they have this cushion and the reason this isn't more stressful is because of what they did earlier in the season. I just want to see them do it at the end of the season.
You want to be clicking on all cylinders as we talk about Kyle Tucker's being placed on the injured list by the Chicago Cubs here on Raheemy and Harris with Mark Grody. But at the same time, you do have to always have an eye on the future. And I don't know if you saw the Bob Nightingale column that he wrote about the Dodgers going after Kyle Tucker this long, because the Dodgers don't have enough.
The Dodgers are like, oh, $200 million is the difference, you say? But that's the approach. That's it. When you think you have enough, get more.
Yeah, the Dodgers and Howie Roseman have things in common that I don't want to admit that are troubling for other teams in other leagues. You know what I'm saying?
Well, Howie Roseman has to deal with a salary cap. The Dodgers do not.
No, not only do they not have to deal with a salary cap, but they can evade luxury taxes to a degree because, you know, that Ohtani deal that they signed the greatest player in the game to. So that comes in. But
they are the luxury tax. But I am Queens Boulevard.
No, but seriously, when you look at the Dodgers in the market for a guy like Kyle Tucker and knowing what they are willing to do versus what the Cubs have been reticent to do with recent guys, hello Bryce Harper, who have become available through free agency, it is quite concerning. That is, unless you are one of, I think, a growing number of Cubs fans who would be okay with Kyle Tucker going somewhere else and then, you know, Owen Casey or whoever, or just going to spend money on somebody else in that position.
Well, and that's it, is unfortunately because of this situation, you know, because frankly, I think he did need an injured list stint when he hurt his finger. We didn't get to see the progress of other people who are under years of control, like Owen Casey, Moises Ballesteros, Kevin Alcantara, how valuable they can be. The balance is you have to keep some of these players in the minor leagues because you need them to be tradable prospects if you do need another blockbuster trade or something like it to get the thing you really need or the person you really want. That happens. You want one of those guys. You want that, oh, we're not trading him. We found out by practice it was Owen Casey. But what we didn't see was the end result of it in a way that made it make sense. Now, you know, typically, linearly, old school, you're bringing up a guy, and if he's ready in September, you keep him there. You know, rosters expand. It's not the same. Nothing has been the same over the past 5 years in baseball compared to before. But how is it affecting everybody's progress? How is it affecting how you're truly evaluating some of these people? And if this is your window, and I truly believe it is because this is the only year you've got guaranteed of this man, how are you utilizing it?
With Kyle Tucker specifically and players in general, the other thing about September is it's usually a time where when you know you're headed to the playoffs, you can get people adequate rest. They don't need to play six games a week. Maybe cap them out at five games a week. And some of these other players, the ones you're talking about, the Alcantaras, the Owen Caseys, the Mo Ballers, those guys now get a little bit more playing time, a little bit more of a look-see, if you will, from a coaching and GM standpoint.
6-3-0. Right field in Atlanta is like a predatory loan store for the Cubs.
Oh, no. That's not good.
Is this the same 6-3-0 that made the reference to Kevin Rizzo? I don't know who this is, but they're pretty funny today. And 2-6-2, let him go to L.A. and bring back Schwarber. I don't think Kyle Schwarber's come through that door. I feel like that is past. I think if priority one for Dave Dombrowski is sign that man, they spend money in Philly.
Also, 6-3-0 has a question. Where's halftime? Would you like to tell him, Layla?
This is halftime. We have too much today. Sometimes we have to do sports when major announcements happen, like Anthony Rizzo retiring. Yeah, congratulations. You got your request. I don't even know. Do we have time for halftime even tomorrow? Tomorrow we probably have time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Although we have a doozy for you at 1:45.
Yeah.
It's fun with sports. So it's technically a sports thing, but it's quite the doozy. We wanted to do it in five on it, but we thought it deserved a little more time.
Can't wait for that. But,
speaking
of five on it, we do have that coming up.
It is next.
It's a thing.
It's our questions. Are they the top questions? No. But do they get us talking? And you? Yes. Did we come up with a name for something that was very important to people at the score? Yes. You can join it next.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.